This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way.
I'm Molly.
And I'm Matthew.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
And today we're talking about mimosas.
Yes! It is a Monday morning at 10:14 a.m. when we're recording this.
AKA wine o'clock.
Wine o'clock. Matthew and I are still recording remotely, and we're going to talk about mimosas. And I forgot to get mimosa ingredients, but Matthew is going to drink alone in the studio.
That's right. Do I need to stir this?
No, I don't think it's usually stirred. I mean, well, you know what? This brings me straight to my memory lane, which is that...
Great.
So I've never been a big going out for brunch person.
No, me neither.
But I have attended a fair number of, like, events that happen in the morning. Like,
Whoa, that sounds really, euphemistic, I guess. Like, events that happen in the morning.
No, I mean,
like... It's like my monthly visitor.
No, it's like, you know, like a bridal lunch, like before a wedding.
That's what brunch is, a bridal lunch.
Or a baby shower sometimes happens at like 11 a.m.
Sure.
And at those, there at these events, perhaps you have heard, listener, there are often these drinks called mimosas. And I think of it as being a really casual thing where somebody, like, sets a bottle of Prosecco out on, like, you know, the breakfast bar, and then there's a carton of orange juice next to it and a whole bunch of cups, and you just go and you mix your own. And so there is no stirring, no shaking. It's just...
Okay, I have an important question because I want to start making myself one right now, and I realize I do not know the answer to this. Which one should I pour into the glass first?
Oh, man. I'm inclined to think you should pour the champagne or the sparkling wine first. I think we should look this up, though. I'm going to look up a mimosa recipe.
Okay, yeah, look up a mimosa recipe.
Because my feeling is that you should do the sparkling wine first because you want to get the bubbles out of the way so that, you know, you want it to do its bubbling and its falling so
see
exactly how much you've got.
Get those bubbles out of the way.
Okay,
yeah, I'm just going to go. You look it up, but I'm going to go ahead and do that. Get these bubbles out
so
of the
people
way.
Say it should be equal parts champagne and orange juice.
Yes, although then other people, of course, disagree.
Okay, let's see. People also say that you should ensure both ingredients are well chilled, then mix into the glass. It should be stirred, not shaken. I mean, yeah, obviously.
Okay, that was about equal parts. I'm not going to shake it or stir it.
Okay, here's the blog Love and Lemons. Which I've heard of before. Very pretty blog. Let's look at this here. Let's see.
Well, that's good.
Yes. This blog says you do the wine first.
Okay, great.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so Matthew, do you feel like you did about equal parts?
I do.
And how is it?
It's delicious. What do you expect?
What kind of orange juice did you go for?
It's the Tropicana No Pulp.
Okay, nice.
Wow. It's probably my favorite supermarket orange juice.
Okay, well, we're off to a great start. So, Matthew, now that you are imbibing,
yeah,
let's go down memory lane. Now that you're lubricated.
Right. So I know that I have like ordered one of these at a brunch in the past. I know this has happened
or that I've been served one.
Well, I think it was when like everyone was getting them.
Oh, peer pressure.
You know what? So it was like at like a brunch happy hour or something. I don't remember when this would have happened, but I feel like there was like some time in like the 2000s, maybe the early 2000s, that like I went to like a brunch happy hour type of thing with people where like it was like, you know, half off mimosas.
Yeah.
And so everyone got them. Did this really happen or was this an episode of Sex and the City that I watched? I don't know. Who cares?
You know, it's an interesting thing, and maybe we can talk more about this in a minute, but there are so many cocktails where, you know, it really matters that you have high quality ingredients, right? If you use like a not very good whiskey in your whiskey sour or in your Manhattan, it's just not going to taste as good.
I once made margaritas with like the cheapest triple sec you can buy. And I was like, why does this taste so bad?
Yeah,
like,
it's really remarkable. My cousin and her husband were traveling around Washington State not too many years ago, and they bought a bottle of some sort of Washington State made whiskey and left it in my like liquor cabinet. And I have opened it up and smelled it a couple times. I mean, I love the state that I live in, but I don't usually buy Washington State whiskey. And the smell of that bottle is why? Like, it
interesting.
It's not what I want.
Do you think it has something to do with our oak barrels?
Let's really go deep on this. No,
yeah,
but
I mean,
anyway,
my oak barrels smell amazing. Thank you very much. I toasted them myself.
So all this said, I can't imagine anybody getting out a bottle of like really great champagne for
a
mimosa.
So I was thinking, I was going to look at the Safeway this morning and see if they had like one of those little bottles of like
Veuve Clicquot
or Moët and Chandon or something, just to like torment you with it. But they didn't. So what I got was a can of house wine brand Brut Bubbles.
I'm going to make an uneducated guess here, which is that a mimosa is probably not one of those drinks that you want to really shell out for the most expensive sparkling wine.
Yeah, I doubt it.
But I do think, that said, I think that the orange juice is going to make a difference. Like, I don't think I would want the Minute Maid reconstituted, like, frozen orange juice canister.
Although,
situation.
I mean, that's kind of good, too.
It's good in its own way. Yeah. I mean, I enjoy it when I am served that stuff. But I don't know if I want that with sparkling wine.
There was, like, I feel like it used to be easier to get shitty orange juice, and, like, orange juice production technology has improved. Because, like, I can still remember, like, the flavor of, like, bad orange juice that I had as a kid, and I haven't run into that in a long time.
Did you ever go to summer camp as a kid, like sleepaway camp?
No.
Oh, okay. So I was going to say,
I was too clingy.
Like, Minute Maid reconstituted orange juice is a like, ubiquitous flavor for me of summer camps as a child.
You know what? I think we talked about this on a previous episode, but my mom used to give me and my brother spoonfuls of concentrate directly out of the Minute Maid frozen concentrate can, and we loved it. It was like a special treat.
I've never had that. I would love to try it.
Yeah, I'm sure it's still good.
Well, so, you know, I hope our listeners will remember my mentioning my childhood friend Jennifer and her mom Linda with her big plastic glasses out by the pool, and the wine with ice cubes in it, the Franzia wine in her fridge. Linda always had Minute Maid concentrate, and so I remember mixing up a batch of it at Jennifer's house, but I didn't. It never occurred to me.
You know what it is? It's like cheap-ass sorbet.
Yeah.
Right?
That's kind of brilliant.
Yeah, because I also, like, I haven't made a smoothie in a long time, but I used to make smoothies with frozen strawberries, orange juice concentrate, banana, and milk, maybe?
Uh-huh.
That seems plausible, right?
Yeah.
That would turn into a smoothie if you blended it.
Okay, well,
but this is
now.
Not the orange juice concentrate episode. This is the mimosa episode.
Yeah, so let's talk about this. So,
one more bit of memory lane that I want to get out, like, you know, before
you
we go any further.
Out.
I need to get this off my chest. That my main association with mimosas is that years ago, I think on the podcast Stop Podcasting Yourself, or maybe another random comedy podcast, someone made a joke that the word mimosa was short for mid-morning sangria, and I have thought about this like at least once a month and probably more ever since, and I just thought it was one of the funniest things I've ever heard.
I love that. Wait, were they saying it like seriously?
Not at all.
It was intended
as a joke, but clearly the person who came up with it, someone came up with it on the spot. It was very proud of themselves.
Oh, it's great.
And deservedly so.
I love it. So Matthew, for the listeners who may never have had a mid-morning sangria, aka mimosa, tell us about it.
Okay, so I did a little research into the history of the mimosa, and this is fraught because it's just...
I thought that word was going to end, duh. This is fraud.
This is fraudulent. I just read, like, this isn't my now but wow, but I just read an amazing book about fraud that I recommend to everybody who's, like, interested in, like, nerdy crime stuff. Like,
fiction,
I haven't
or
read
non-fiction?
Many other books that put together like crime and nerdery in this way. And I think it's called Lying About Money, but I'm going to look it up because I really enjoyed this book. Lying for Money by Dan Davies.
Okay. How did you hear about it?
I think I was just like looking for new stuff on the library website.
Nonfiction?
Yeah, although I'll take fiction also. But this book, like the writing is good, and like there's so much good stuff about like historical frauds and modern frauds, and like why it's hard to get away with fraud, but why people keep trying it anyway. It's yeah. Anyway, there is not, as far as I know, any fraud involved in the history of the mimosa, but who knows? But I can say for sure there is definitely no consensus on who invented it, because it is literally just orange juice and sparkling wine. So, like, you know, there are some claims, of course, and I'm going to go through them because that's what we do. So, first off, there is a similar drink called the Buck's Fizz. That is associated with the Buck's Club in London, which is a gentleman's club, and it was allegedly invented there in 1921. The Buck's Club still exists at 18 Clifford Street, so if you're in London, check it out. The Buck's Fizz is two parts champagne, one part orange juice, so a little more on the champagne side than a typical mimosa.
Okay.
A number of sources credit the mimosa, including the name, to Frank Meyer at the Ritz-Carlton in Paris in 1925. However, Meyer published a cocktail book in the early 30s and included a mimosa recipe and did not take credit for it. That was given as evidence that probably he didn't invent it, because why wouldn't you take credit for it?
Maybe he's just a really, like, sharing kind of guy.
Yeah, maybe he's modest.
Yeah.
The Oxford Companion to American Food and Drink claims that Alfred Hitchcock was the person who popularized the mimosa as a brunch drink in the U.S. It is clear that Alfred Hitchcock was a big fan of mimosas. Some sources even say that Alfred Hitchcock invented the mimosa.
You know what? I'm really bummed, though, that we don't call mimosas Alfred Hitchcock's. Like, Arnold Palmer has the Arnold Palmer. Why don't we just go ahead and make the Alfred Hitchcock?
Okay. I'm fine with calling this the Alfred Hitchcock until I finish it.
I don't know why the Arnold Palmer rolls off my tongue easier than the Alfred Hitchcock.
It's because he has such a, if I knew anything about golf, I'd make a joke about golf. Like he's got like a smooth swing or something, and that's why it rolls off your tongue.
He's got like a nice wedge.
He's got, the Arnold Palmer has a really nice wedge.
Okay, but wait, hang on. I'm really intrigued by... Was the mimosa always thought of as something to drink during the daylight hours?
No. I mean, it did seem to be like something you would drink like by the pool at a hotel or something.
Okay.
But also that you would order like in the evening at the hotel bar.
Interesting. That's really interesting. Okay.
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know when it migrated into being seen as a brunch beverage, presumably because it has orange juice in it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Other sources say that it was popularized by the British royal family during the 60s when they were, like, seen ostentatiously enjoying them.
Oh, God. I endeavor to never be seen ostentatiously enjoying anything.
Oh, but that's all I want to do.
I want to be seen ostentatiously enjoying things?
Yeah, I want there to be an Instagram devoted to, like, candid shots of me ostentatiously enjoying things.
It would be, like, the opposite of the photo of Keanu that was going around where
he just looked completely sad Keanu.
This would be, like, ostentatious enjoyment Matthew.
Right, so it would be, like, get a load of, like, how much this guy is enjoying this like, heart dog.
I
meant to say hot dog, but it came out as heart dog.
Wait a minute.
Yeah?
How would you, like, express this enjoyment? Like, if you were captured sitting on, like, a curb eating a hot dog, okay?
So would this be a still photo or, like, a short video? Because
But that could also look like... Hold on now. Let me just see if I can capture this right. Okay, so let's see. I'm going to eat a bite of hot dog, and then would I go, like... But then I just
you'd say, oh, that's the stuff.
Then I just look like something is not quite right with me if I'm just like, after I eat my hot dog.
Yeah. This is tough.
I don't know how to express enjoyment
Maybe there would be like, I was going to say a hot dog wrapper. Yeah, like one of those little like hot dog boats, like just empty sitting next to me. And I just look really satisfied.
I thought you meant like... rapper like a musician.
Yes. Like, you know, one of those rappers that specializes in songs about hot dogs.
I was kind of thinking the hype man.
If you like mom's spaghetti, you're gonna love this.
You know, I was thinking like the Lil Jon of hot dogs.
That's right. Yeah. Ballpark Franks hired Little John to do a whole album about hot dogs. Mm-hmm. It's going to be great.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, I'll be your hype man for your new Instagram account.
Okay. Yeah. So I think, right. So now I've got what the idea is. So it's that I've already finished the food, but the packaging is sitting next to me. So you know what I ate and I just look really satisfied. Okay.
Okay. And then
I'm being joined by a rapper who is going to perform a song about the food that I just ate.
I can't wait.
I didn't share any with them.
I take it back. I don't want to be the rapper. I feel like somebody else. No, I'm
no,
not.
No, I don't see why you shouldn't be the rapper in this scenario. It seems perfect. I know it's been your dream job.
Okay. Okay. So hold on, though. I just want to say again, what made you choose the phrase... the British royal family who enjoyed them ostentatiously in the 1960s.
I don't know. I think I read like that they were seen enjoying them. And so I inferred that they must have been doing something ostentatious. I mean,
I think they were probably like waving the champagne glass around in the air.
That's literally their job, is like doing things ostentatiously. Like, remember when there was that royal wedding and people kept talking about hats? Like, you know, the Duchess of so-and-so was wearing like a 7-foot tall hat.
Yeah. Yeah, so, fascinators, you know.
Fascinators, right. So I assume like they were treating their mimosas and hot dogs as fascinators.
I wonder if somebody has ever had a fascinator in the shape of a champagne glass and it was filled with orange juice and sparkling wine.
I think I've 100% chance.
Okay. British royal family, come on over for mimosas.
Oh, that's right. Do you think we could get the British royal family on as a guest?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
I mean, we probably couldn't get one of the big ones like, you know, like Franklin or Chelsea or whatever.
Well, I think pretty much nobody's going to want to talk to Prince Albert from now on.
No, in a can or not.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I'm going to want to talk to him either, really. But
wait, was Prince Albert the one that was friends with Epstein?
I think
so. Is that what we're talking about? Or was it Andrew?
Oh. Oh, God.
I think Prince Albert is like died in like 100 years ago.
Prince Albert is in a can.
Prince Albert is in a can where he belongs. He's been canceled.
But nobody's going to want to talk to Prince Albert.
No, you're right.
I love that we thought Prince Albert was the one who was friends with Epstein.
Yeah, we thought it was Prince Albert. We.
Okay,
you're right.
I
am enjoying this cocktail.
Anyway, hold on. Wait.
Yeah,
we could get Prince Andrew because nobody else is
Let's
not. Okay.
You know who we could get? You know how like you can like buy a lordship?
Yes.
We can get one of those people. No, all right. Prince Andrew and Prince Albert, neither is welcome on our show. This episode is brought to you by MasterClass.
Matthew, take a minute and picture that thing that you've always wanted to learn.
All right, I'm picturing the thing.
Okay.
And you know, what if I get lost in the wilderness?
Well, okay, this is the thing?
This is the thing.
Oh, okay. Well, so picture learning it from someone who's literally the best at getting lost in the wilderness.
No, no, no.
In the world.
You don't understand, Molly. I want to get found in the wilderness.
Oh, okay.
So And for that, I turn to Jesse Krebs, who is an internationally recognized expert on wilderness survival. She has a class on Masterclass, and she teaches like the five basic needs. And if you think number one is water, you're wrong. She teaches you how to use a knife, how to use rope, one of your most important tools in the wilderness. I don't think I'm going to get stuck in the wilderness, but if I do, I'm going to be really happy that I took this class on Masterclass.
Yeah, well, Masterclass is where you should go if you don't just want to think about learning something, but you actually want to do it with one-on-one classes with the world's best.
Yeah, if you want to learn singing from Christina Aguilera, if you want to learn shooting threes from Steph Curry, there's only one place in the world to do those things, unless you happen to know those people, which you don't.
Yeah, you don't. And every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk.
And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
That's 15% off right now at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
masterclass.com/spilledmilk15. I did find, and I wasn't quite sure what to make of this, that in Spain, where the mimosa is often known as an agua de Valencia.
Oh, like a water of Valencia.
I'm glad you're having a good time, even though you didn't get the cocktail ingredients for yourself. I do feel bad about that a little bit.
Don't feel bad for me. It's my problem
forgot. Yeah,
it's
true.
Yeah, it was. It was my fault.
I almost didn't because, like, I was going to go to the store last night and then it started raining a lot. This is an interesting story.
This is a great story. Yeah.
Can I tell another interesting story? This is going to be, like, the most interesting story you or the listener has ever
How
heard.
How trashed are you right now?
I'm like, you know, playing it up for the show.
Okay.
I mean, like, more than not, because I'm, like, a super lightweight, and I've had, like, a quarter of this can of sparkling wine. Last week I mentioned, like, I'm not going to stop talking about my tooth. I got a crown. This is my first time, and I got the crown in now, and it's great.
Okay.
And the dentist was so proud of himself that he asked if I could come back so that he could take photos to use on his website.
Is this a new dentist? Like, I mean, newly
operating?
He's
a pretty young guy.
I mean, are you his first patient?
I might be his first patient, yeah.
Okay.
And he's very nice. So I said, sure. And he said, what can I do for you in return? For your time. He said, do you want like some free whitening trays? And I was like, not really. I said, you know what I could really use though? Like, if you want to give me like a larger than usual amount of free floss, we would use that. And I told you this is going to be an interesting story.
You're getting compensated in floss.
So I went this morning to get the pictures taken. So first of all, it was modeling. Like, I'm a model now.
Wow.
You know what I mean? And I do my little dance on the catwalk. The hygienist said, and here's that floss. And what they had, this may be related to supply chain issues, was a bunch of little packets of like individual servings of floss. Which I've never seen before.
What?
I've never seen this before. It's like a little packet that looks like one of those salt packets, kind of. And you tear it in half and like pull it out and like it pulls out into one 18-inch piece of floss. And I got maybe 25 of these.
It's more packaging than floss, basically.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So you just got basically a 3.5-week supply of floss.
Maybe less.
Oh, my God.
No, I think that's about right. I don't floss twice a day.
How do you feel about it? Do you feel cheated?
Cheated? No, because like I was happy to help. Like I want my tooth to appear on the Fresh Smile website. Like that just is really important.
Are
to
we
me.
Gonna link to it once it's up?
I hope so. Like I don't know like when when they're gonna put it up, but if we could, and so like I wanted to do it just like to do it, but I was sort of hoping that I was gonna get like 10,000 meters of floss.
Well, yeah, I was kind of imagining that what you were gonna say was kind of the opposite. Like I have a giant spool of butcher's twine in our kitchen. Like, like I'll have it hopefully for
but
the rest
of my life. But to be
fair,
you do a lot of trussing.
And I was hoping that is what you were going to get. Like
I know.
A spool.
Yes. What I wanted was like like something like a regular flip top box of floss, only like 100 times as big.
Yeah.
That was gratifying to be asked to be a tooth model and also a little bit disappointing. I hope he doesn't listen to this episode. Okay, we need to talk about Spain because I kept finding references, but nothing that really seemed authoritative. That first of all, that in Spain, the mimosa is often known as an agua de Valencia because Valencia is where the oranges come from.
Juice oranges, especially, right?
Yeah, it is alleged that because cava, sparkling wine, has been popular in Spain for centuries and so have juice oranges, that it's inevitable that people have been making mimosas in Spain for hundreds of years. At the same time, I did not find any actual, like, historical evidence of this. Mm-hmm. But also, I didn't look very hard. So if anybody knows about that, please get in touch. Contact at spilledmilkpodcast.com.
Okay.
So should we talk about some mimosa variations?
Yeah. I don't know if I've ever had a variation, but I mean, obviously it makes a lot of sense.
I don't think I have either, but I found a fun list. So why don't we go through that? I didn't make a quiz. I probably should have.
Okay.
So the poinsettia is cranberry juice with champagne. That seems like a totally different cocktail, not a mimosa variation, right? A lot of these are going to.
I mean, I don't know.
Because they're mostly going to be a totally different fruit juice and sparkling wine.
Well, there's no other way to make a mimosa into a different cocktail. Well, I mean, as far as I can tell.
I mean, we're going to get to one that's going to blow your mind.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I found multiple references to the Megmosa.
What?
Which is grapefruit juice and champagne. Why is it called the Megmosa, you ask? Well, according to Food 52, it's because, quote, it was named after its founder, M. Shepard. So that clears everything up, right?
Where's the G?
I don't know.
Is it Megan Shepard?
Maybe it's Megan Shepard. I did not think of that. Shepherd? That makes sense. But, I don't know.
Okay, go on.
Lemosa, lemonade and champagne.
That does seem like a totally different drink to me. I mean, lemonade is such a different thing.
Yeah, and the Grand Mimosa, which is a mimosa plus Grand Marnier.
Oh.
That's the one that's going to blow your mind, so consider it blown.
Mind blown.
Great.
Wow, okay.
I also learned that you can buy a journal with a cover that says, "Brilliant ideas I had while drinking mimosas."
Like at a stationary supply store?
At a stationary supply store, yeah, exactly. Not on Etsy, but at an industrial, like B2B supply store.
B2B.
It's business to business. Yeah.
I've never heard that phrase. Is that like cash and carry, B2B?
Cash and carry is totally B2B.
What else is B2B?
I don't know.
Okay. Matthew, do you ever drink these other than like right now?
This is the first one I've had in a really long time, I think. How about you? Do you ever make them at home?
I never make them at home.
I know you go to a lot of baby showers and get them there.
I never make them at home. I did have, I had like a distant variation on this. I mean, while we're busy talking about anything being a variation on a mimosa, I went out for brunch for the first time in like an actual million years a couple weeks ago to a terrific neighborhood spot in Seattle called
Union
Saloon.
The last time you went
out
to brunch, you were on a date with a Diplodocus.
Is that a dinosaur?
That's a dinosaur.
This drink is doing such good things for you.
I think you're right, but like, look, there's still this much left. I've had less than a quarter of this can of wine. So
you're
a third of a glass of wine so far, basically. Like, that's where I'm at in life. And it's fine.
Oh, it's great. It's great. Don't change. Anyway, so I decided that I wanted to just be wild and crazy. And so I ordered a cup of coffee. And I can't remember now what they called it, but it was like a morning cocktail.
It was half coffee, half champagne.
It was grapefruit juice, sparkling wine, and Aperol. So it was sort of like an Aperol spritz kind of mimosa situation.
I mean, that sounds like a Megmosa with a twist.
It was delicious. Oh, wait a minute. It wasn't Aperol. It was a different Amaro. But anyway.
Oh, thank God.
I got to get this right. No, but it was delicious.
Was it Chinar?
No, it was something I'd never heard of called like Berto.
Okay.
This is a great part of the show. Everybody's
this is almost as interesting as my story about how I got free floss.
No, I love
but not very
that
much.
So, Matthew, what's your favorite ratio?
I don't know. I was going to like experiment with different ratios, but I don't want to. I don't want to.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm going to say 50-50.
Okay. Well, that is the classic. That's the classic.
Maybe, you know what my favorite ratio is? It's the golden ratio of like 1.618 to 1. Is that the golden ratio? I think that's close.
I don't remember. I'm thinking of aspect ratios.
Okay, oh, yeah, yeah. My favorite ratio is...
3 to 2? 2 to 3? What
no,
is it?
No, like that's kind of basic. More like 16 to 9.
Okay.
Like okay. I want like an ultra wide screen mimosa. So I like none of this pan and scan mimosa.
Okay. Well, shall we head into spilled mail?
Let's head into spilled mail because I think we've really run this into the ground. We got this message from listener Corey, who writes, I just listened to your roasted veg episode, and your roasting versus baking debate reminded me of a book I recently read that I think would make an excellent reference source for the podcast. Yes, I'm a librarian. It's What's the Difference? Recreational Culinary Reference for the Curious and Confused by Brett Warshaw.
Oh, Brett Warshaw.
Do you know Brett Warshaw? Wait.
I know Brett Warshaw, formerly of Food 52. I mean, I don't know if she thinks she knows me, but I know her. And anyway, Brett Warshaw's What's the Difference started out as like a newsletter.
Oh, excellent. I'm really enjoying the book.
It's terrific.
Yeah. Yeah. So listener Corey goes on. It has a section on this very topic, baking versus roasting, among others like appetizers versus canapes versus hors d'oeuvres, which I think we've talked about, barbecue versus grilling, and cornmeal versus grits versus polenta. I immediately got this book from the library. I'm enjoying it a ton. I recommend it. The answer is, like, there is no difference between baking and roasting. I also wanted to share, this is back to listener Corey, I also wanted to share this recipe for crispy broccoli with sweet chili glaze and ginger from Jenny Rosenstock, which is the only way I ever want broccoli anymore. Thanks for the podcast. Hope it goes on for always.
Ugh.
So we will link to this broccoli recipe that listener Corey recommended, and I am planning to make it, and I guarantee it's going to be good because it calls for like 3 small heads of broccoli, 1 stick of butter, and 1/4 cup of olive oil. So yeah, it's going to be good.
Wow. Oh, that's delightful. Well, Jenny Rosenstock is fantastic.
Yeah,
so
I mentioned this to teenager of the show December, who is not a broccoli fan, and they were like, oh yeah, I'll try that.
Excellent. Thank you, listener Corey. I did not know that Brett had written this book. I only knew of like the online early days of this What's the Difference concept. So I'm thrilled to hear about it. Thank you.
Yeah, it's really fun. Like the info is good, but also it has like a real like wry sense of humor.
Awesome. Well, it's my week to do it now, but wow. Matthew, so some of our listeners may already be familiar with what I am wowing over at the
moment.
That's
okay.
But it is a, gosh, at this point, it's an almost 5-year-old essay by Ocean Vuong. It's called A Letter to My Mother That She Will Never Read. It was originally published in The New Yorker and has a really interesting story. So this is published as nonfiction, as an essay, but it became the sort of the opening for his novel.
Oh, nice.
On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous. So he sort of started from, you know, a true story. And then kind of took his imagination or, you know, used his imagination to sort of expand it into a whole novel. But anyway, this essay is staggeringly beautiful. It is about a really difficult, sometimes abusive mother-son relationship. But it is, I mean, I think it is one of the finest essays I have ever read. It is beautifully crafted. Ocean Vuong has such a clearly poetic sensibility that he brings to writing this essay. And if this sounds good to you, go read it. It is spectacularly beautiful. Yeah, I am in awe of it and
okay.
wanted to share it.
We will link to it in the show notes. A Letter to My Mother That She Will Never Read by Ocean Vuong. I do have a question for you. You mentioned this is from the May 2017 New Yorker. Should listeners infer from this recommendation that that is as far as you've gotten in the pile of New Yorkers next to your bed?
No.
Okay.
No. In fact,
nobody believes you.
I stopped getting print issues of the New Yorker because I could not handle the stack anymore.
Of course, no
so
one
actually,
can.
So now I just get a digital subscription, which I actually really love. The app is really good. Mm-hmm. And then I get the pleasure of sort of bebopping around, like following... following like links from this article to this article. And anyway.
Yeah. Whereas if you get the print issue, you're required to read it from front to back, including like the New York theater listings.
No bebopping allowed.
No bebopping allowed. All right. Anything else we need to say about mimosas or anything else or dentistry or dead problematic English guys in cans?
I don't think so. I feel like we've really covered a lot of
I think we really plumbed the depths on this one.
We have, with emphasis on this being a really deep episode.
All right. Well, our very deep producer is Abby Circatella. Please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. Come chat with other people on Reddit, reddit.com/r/everythingspilledmilk, where the topic of the week is definitely going to be what is your preferred mimosa ratio?
Or, like, should we actually cancel Prince Albert?
Sure.
Can. Soul.
Yeah. That was worth repeating.
good.
What does Molly have to look forward to in New Yorker issues beyond 2017?
Yeah, what's going to happen in May 2017? I mean, June 2017.
There's going to be a cartoon of a patient lying on a couch.
Maybe there'll be a really good Roz Chast cartoon.
Maybe there'll be a really good Roz Chast. Yeah.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening to Spilled Milk, the show that's like a stick of butter and a quarter cup of olive oil for your ears.
But who's the stick of butter and who's the quarter cup of olive oil? That's for you to find out.
I'm Molly Weisenberg.
And I'm Matthew Hamster Burton. Wait, did I lose you?
No, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can't hear you. Why?
Testing, 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 testing.
Oh,
one,
yeah,
two,
that
three.
Is weird. No, the problem's definitely on my end.
Okay.
Yeah, I was wearing the wrong headphones. We're good now.
Oh my God, that's great. I love it.
And we recorded all of that, so that's good.
Oh,
let's just leave that in the episode.
Perfect. Okay.